shit, shit, shit show. It's a fucking shit show, shit show.
Welcome back to Shit Show Saturday. We have quite a special shit show. We have Shit Show Katie, who had the best line ever. You said, I have grown more in this community from listening and sharing than I have from any therapist.
Right.
Welcome.
It's true. I think that there's something really special about how deep we go. You can say whatever and no one's going to do anything or say anything. There's no repercussions for it. And I feel like it was very easy to walk into the shit show space and quickly realize that it was a safe place because other people are sharing really vulnerable, scary things that maybe you've kept in your head for 48 years. And when someone else says it out loud, you're like, oh shit, it's not just me.
I'm not an abnormal freak.
Right. And like, I know that even when I don't feel like sharing something, it's going to help me on some level and it's going to help somebody else. I realized last night or yesterday, just from listening to people, I like will pick things up and subconsciously process them. Like someone in the group was talking about how their mom was on a cruise and stopped in San Francisco and they went to lunch and all that stuff. Then I had a dream that my mom was on a cruise, you know, and it was like, like on some level, I'm like processing shit with my own mom, listening to other people's stories. So
that's so funny.
Yeah.
Okay. So what song do you want when you walk into a room?
The one I came up with was Alaska by Maggie Rogers.
Okay. Why that song?
It was sort of like my mantra song when I started on this sort of healing journey. And when I first realized that I had PTSD or complex PTSD due to my upbringing. And it talks about like shedding, like detaching from people that have been in your lives and like shedding that like old version of yourself.
And escaping to Alaska?
Maybe. She talks about a glacier in there somewhere. So, but yeah, it reminds me, it makes me think of like how I can love my parents. I can like love parts of my childhood, but I can also like shake that all off and figure out who I am. And who I am doesn't have to be attached to who they
are. Defined to that, yeah. Carbohydrate.
Any kind of potato.
How do we want it served?
Oh, preferably crispy French fries.
Nice. Do you like crispy on the outside, mashed potato on the inside like Sandra?
Yeah.
Okay.
But I'll take crispy all the way through. Like I would eat burnt.
Okay. Cheese.
I can't really eat like cow's milk cheese, but I can do like goat cheese and sheep cheese. So I think Manchego, I think that's how you say it. It's like a sheep's milk cheese.
Spanish cheese. Yeah, very good. Condiment.
Oh, I had to think about this one. I had to think really hard about this one, which is ridiculous. So I'm going to say mayo or fry sauce, but I could make fry sauce with mayo.
And what brand of mayonnaise?
Oh, Best Foods or Hellman's. I guess they're the same.
Same thing. Yeah. Yep. Okay. So how did you learn that you were an adult child?
Some of it is a little bit of a blur. Like, okay, so for the longest time, and I've heard other people say this too, I thought adult child just meant adult child of alcoholics, right? And that was tied into 12-step programs, which I wasn't into at all because my mom, which we'll get into, but like when I was little, I had to go to like Al-Anon as a little Alateen or something. And I just rubbed me the wrong way.
You remember going?
I remember going and it being small, like not that many kids. And I just remember coloring and zoning out. Like,
how old do you think you were?
I was 9 or 10.
Okay.
So when I figured out I had complex PTSD, I just went down the rabbit hole of podcasts and books and anything I could get my hands on that would try to explain this to me. And it's like one podcast would lead me to another and another. And I didn't even know complex PTSD was a thing. And then I kept seeing like complex PTSD and adult children of immature parents and adult. And I was like, okay. I'm not a child. That's not what it means. And then even when I found your podcast,
how did you find the podcast?
Through that rabbit hole. Like I probably just was Googling and Googling. And then I just kept listening and listening. And going, this is me. Like the deeper I went was like, shit, this is also me.
Do you remember the first episode you listened to?
No, no clue. I listened to them all. Like there was a flight. I was on a flight and I visited friends in Colorado and I think I downloaded the whole season and I listened to them back to back nonstop. That's all I remember. Like a lot of it's a blur. And I just remember being kind of shocked. Just kind of shocked. Yeah.
How did you learn that you had complex PTSD?
So my husband and I go on vacation with my parents a lot. And it's always really stressful. And we always end up fighting. Always. And so then there's like this buildup to the vacation. And like, are we going to argue? We're not going to argue, right? And so this trip was one of the longer trips we've ever been on with my parents.
Where'd you guys go?
We went to Tahiti. It was amazing.
Wow. Did you stay in a hut above the ocean?
Yeah. It was like the trip of a lifetime. We hope to go back someday. I don't know if we'll ever be able to afford it, but I hope to. So we're on this trip and my dad planned everything. He paid for everything. He planned everything. He's a planner. He likes to have the sheets of paper. He'd have a spreadsheet if he knew how to do it. And my husband's very much like a free spirit. He is like spontaneous and he loves to like have a good time and whatever. And my dad's the planner and I'm a super planner too. So my dad had these excursions planned where we were going to go snorkeling and all this. And then my husband wanted to rent a boat on another day, kind of do our own thing. And my dad said to me, you need to tell your husband that that's not a good idea and I don't want to do that. So I would go tell my husband. So my dad's really worried about this, but he doesn't want you to do it. And then my husband would go back to my dad and say, hey, Katie tells me that you don't want me to do this thing. And my dad would go, oh, no, 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 no. That's fine. You do whatever you want to do. I don't want to get in the way of your fun. And for some reason, it occurred to me finally that he was triangulating us. Like Kelly and I had this honest conversation. Like, what did he say to you? And what did you say to him? And I was like, it just was such bullshit. And I flew off the handle. Guy was like, I can't do this anymore. I'm in the most beautiful place in the world. And I am having a meltdown. Like, oh my God, you've done this every year. You've done this every holiday. We've fought every holiday and every vacation because you can't be honest. And so it made the rest of the vacation really hard. And I remember, I didn't know what was happening, but I remember walking down the beach and going, I need therapy. Like, I need therapy. And then when I got home, I don't remember what I did, but I think I was Googling things like, you know, what do you do when you realize your parents are assholes? Or, and then I found a therapist and I had a call with her. And this all happened within like days of getting back. And I was in a Target parking lot on the phone with her, just bawling. Like, I think I have complex PTSD. Like, yeah, it sounds like you have complex PTSD. And so she gave me some book recommendations until we could meet. And yeah, it was like, oh shit, that's bad. That's real bad.
Was that your first time in therapy?
No. So my first time in therapy was when I was 10. So when I was 9 or 10, my mom went into rehab for alcoholism. Mm-hmm. And to be honest, I don't ever remember. I mean, I think I blocked things out because since then things have come back. But at the time, her drinking and her drinking being a problem wasn't a reality in my mind. And so I didn't really understand what was happening. It was like, mom's an alcoholic. I'm like, okay. So you're going to go away for a month and I don't get to see you. And so I think they sent me to like a therapist, like a family therapist at the rehab. And I didn't know what was going on. They were like, is it upsetting to you when you see your mom drink? And I was like, no, what the fuck is this? And then I saw a therapist again when I was, I think, 15, which was probably like my first bottom, you know, looking back, and he scared the shit out of me. So I don't have a great
track record
with therapists. It's a struggle for sure.
So we'll backtrack.
Yeah, sorry, I'm all over the place.
Well, no, that's good. I have a lot of questions, but I'll wait until I get there. So I'm curious what happened with your mom related to her drinking, like after that happened.
So she went to rehab and probably, like, I remember feeling really proud of her.
So you weren't aware, like me, like when she was intoxicated, like any of that stuff?
I don't know. I don't remember being aware. And I remember saying I wasn't aware. But every once in a while, I have little blips of memories pop up and I was aware. So I think at a very young age, started that, you know, don't talk thing. Mm-hmm. Like, no one talked about it. So why would I talk about it for, mm-hmm. you know? I just knew something was wrong with her sometimes. Mm-hmm. And she wasn't nice all the time. And I just thought everyone's moms were like that. So, but when she got out, I feel like she stayed sober for maybe about a year. And then it was like, I think I saw her drinking. You know, I was very into it. Like, I was very, like, proud of her and really into this. And I thought everybody who drinks should go do this or whatever a little kid thinks. And then when I saw her drinking, I remember asking her about it. And she basically said she got what she needed out of rehab, but she decided she's not actually an alcoholic. She doesn't have a problem with alcohol. That wasn't her problem. That her problem was actually like things that happened to her in her childhood. So she was going to deal with that differently, but she was going to keep drinking. And even at like 12, I was angry. I was like, that goes against everything you made us all go through. Like, her being in rehab was a big secret. I still don't know who knew.
Mm-hmm. Do you remember talking with your dad about it at all?
No, I don't think we talked about it. I think it was like, there were rules. I didn't get to talk to her for like the first week. And I remember that being so hard.
Were you really close with your mom?
Yeah, she was my safe person, my safer person. And then I remember I could talk to her, but there was like a time limit. It kind of felt like she was in prison or something, you know?
Yeah.
And then there was like a day we could go visit. And then there was family day. And so like other families were there and I made friends with a little girl that was my age that was there. And the nurses there gave us popsicles and... Yeah, I just remember being really lonely and like I would just like follow my dad around because I was lonely and scared. But I don't think we talked about it. We just like went out to pizza and rented movies and didn't talk about it.
You're an only child like me.
Yeah.
And so what were the dynamics like in your home prior to that? Do you have many memories or was there a feeling that things were unsafe or things were dysfunctional or what was the relationship like between your parents?
It's funny, like most of it, I think of it as like just their personalities. You know, my mom's really rigid and likes things a certain way. My dad's a little bit more easygoing. He worked a lot, so he wasn't around that much. She was a stay-at-home mom. Like I think about sitting at the dinner table at night, you know, we all ate dinner together at 6 o'clock and the news would be on and my dad would always comment on what my mom made. It was either good or it was bad. So it was always stressful. I never wanted to eat dinner. Like, I always remember my mom saying, at least drink your milk. Like, I hated dinner time. I hated it. I couldn't wait till dinner time was over. Because then Wheel of Fortune would come on, and that was something we all liked. And mm-hmm. So then we'd watch Wheel of Fortune, and then that part of the evening would be over. And I don't remember a time where, like, the evening didn't cause anxiety. So it's more like feeling. I remember feeling. Mm-hmm. They didn't really fight. Like they bickered, but they didn't fight. There wasn't any like physical abuse or anything like that. Yeah.
Did your dad drink much?
I don't remember my dad drinking at all. Apparently my dad did drink and then he stopped cold turkey. He used to drink whiskey. And then one time he drank whiskey and got really sick and he never drank it again. And even now, like if we go on vacation, he might have, you know, a few drinks every once in a while, but he's not a drinker.
Mm-hmm. And what do you know about their upbringings?
I don't know much about my dad's, which is so weird because I always thought we were closer to his family than my mom's.
Were they around? Like, did you live near your grandparents?
Yeah, my grandma and grandpa had a pool and me and my cousins would all go over there. It was really fun. My grandma was amazing. My grandpa was amazing. But, you know, I think watching how my kids with my parents, my relationship with my grandma and grandpa had nothing to do with my dad's upbringing, right? Like grandkids are different. Mm. I think my dad was the oldest of four kids. And he was not the favorite. I know that. He was the different one. Mm-hmm. Looking back, I think probably he's on the autism spectrum like I am. Like, he probably stood out. I think there was just a lot of neglect, not a lot of maybe physical abuse. And then my mom's background was horrible.
Our bodies come in different shapes and sizes, so doesn't it make sense that our weight loss plans should too? That's the beauty of Noom. They build a personal plan that factors in dietary restrictions, medical issues, and other personal needs so your plan works for you. Noom doesn't restrict or shame when you want to treat yourself. Their flexible program focuses on progress instead of perfection. You don't have to give up carbs or anything. And with their daily lessons, you can learn something new about your food choices every day. After just a few days of using the app, I learned how to recognize cues for overeating and how to choose the right foods to feel full. Stay focused on what's important to you with Noom's psychology and biology-based approach. Sign up for your trial today at Noom.com. That's Noom.com. And check out Noom's first ever cookbook, The Noom Kitchen, for 100 healthy and delicious recipes to promote better living. Available to buy now wherever books are sold.
Like, just horrible. A lot of physical abuse, emotional abuse, sexual abuse, abandonment. Mm-hmm. She was given up by her mother to an abusive birth father. But then the mother, like, kept another child and raised her and lived with her till she was, like, in her old age. So wow. Just a lot of
weirdness.
Yeah, I feel like every traumatic experience you can imagine my mom had growing up. And so that really made her a very overprotective, hypervigilant, just suffocating as a mom. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You know, she wanted to protect me from everything that she endured. And I have to give her credit. She protected me from a lot of things.
So then what happened at 15?
So at 15, I was starting to see a lot more of the, I think she started drinking more. Like, when she started drinking again, I started to see the behavior change. And I could see when she was hiding her drinking, like, it was hiding in plain sight. You know, she would act like she was drinking a big glass of water, but it was really full of vodka. Mm. At 15, I figured out that I could smoke weed and drink in the house and no one would notice. Because my dad didn't care. He's checked out and my mom's drunk. And so the hypocrisy of all the rules that were put on me, my parents were so strict, and the way they behaved as parents, like, it fucked with my brain so bad. I just couldn't understand it. And now, having raised kids through that age, your brain is trying to make sense of the world. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't make sense in my own house. And other families didn't function this way. And so I forgot about a lot of this until, like, last year. I got in an argument with my mom on New Year's Eve. My dad was out of town and a friend invited me over to spend the night. And it's like 4 p.m. And so I was so excited. I was like, oh, it's New Year's Eve. Of course my mom will say yes. So I, like, got dressed. And when I went to ask her, she said, I couldn't go. And I couldn't go because she couldn't drive, because at 4 o'clock she was already drunk. And I knew that, but I couldn't say it. And so I said everything else. I don't know what I said to her, but I just was like, it's not fair. You know, it's like a teenage temper tantrum. I'm pretty sure that's all it was. And she, for the only time I can remember, came back at me and said the most horrible things to me that, you know, the things I had done and said are unforgivable. And because I said mean things and then I apologized, you know, I came back and said, I'm so sorry. I said those things. I didn't mean to make you upset. And she was like, too late. Like, you already said those things and you're just a mean person. And I don't know. I don't remember everything, but I remember feeling like the deepest abandonment and rejection. I couldn't leave the house. She was drunk. She was the only adult. Like, I didn't have siblings. Like, and so I tried to kill myself, like, that night. There wasn't really anything in the house. And so I think I took, like, whatever was in the medicine cabinet. And all it did was make me really, really sick. And I'm still a little kid. So I went to my mom because I was sick and I was like, here's what I did. And she immediately, you know, was like, why did you do this? And I don't really remember much after that, except they kept an eye on me. You know what I mean? Like, they wouldn't let me out of their sight. And then 2 days later, they told me to get in the car and they took me to the same rehab that my mom had gone to. And
where were you living again? You grew up in the Midwest?
No, I grew up on the coast, just south of, like, near San Jose.
Okay. Oh, yeah, that's right.
So they took me to the same rehab my mom was in.
Did they have an adolescent unit?
They did. And they threatened to check me in. And they were going through the whole registration process. They drug tested me in the bathroom. I think you said you had this similar experience where they told you you had, like, the highest level they've ever seen. Was that you? So somebody said that. I remember hearing somebody else say that. And I was like, that must be a thing they do. They said I had the highest levels of THC they'd ever seen. And I was like, what? Doesn't make any sense. And so they said, oh, we don't have space available right now. We'll call you. And so I realized really quickly that my parents didn't see me trying to end my life as, like, a call for help or, like, a mental health breakdown. They saw it as, oh, she must be an addict.
I think they were fucking with you.
I don't know what they were doing. Like, if my child tried to kill themselves, we would be at the emergency room.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. But what I'm saying is bringing you there, like, I don't think they had any intention of checking you in. Like, I think it was like a scared straight kind of thing.
Oh, for sure. Because
they wouldn't have you come there and be like, oh, we don't have room for you. Like, they wouldn't do that.
No, and the fucked up thing is my mom was drinking again and she had friends that worked there. You know, so, like, she made a phone call at some point and, like, planned this. This was not like a, oh, I'm so scared for my child. I don't know what to do. This is the only thing I know to do. It was like fucking with me further. And so I remember kind of having this moment sitting there thinking, I can't trust anybody. I can't trust the person across the table from me. I can't trust my parents in the room with me. I'm just going to have to, like, lie and shut this all down just to survive. You know, like, I've got 3 more years that I have to live here and I can do it. I can do it. I can shut it all down and pretend I'm someone I'm not.
Well, and we know why they handled it that way, because if it was for any other reason than you being an addict, well, then they'd have to look at themselves. And who wants to do that?
Yeah, no, there's no way. And I kind of wonder, like, what did my mom tell my dad? Because he wasn't home. And what did she remember? Because she was drunk enough to scream and yell at me and say those horrible things. I'm like, did she even remember what happened? Mm. Like, can you imagine? I can't even imagine calling my husband and being like, I think our kid tried to kill herself last night, but I can't remember. I blacked out. And when you're at your most vulnerable, like, that was the lowest I've ever been. And then to be manipulated by your mother in that moment, it was like, at 15, I remember thinking that, like, part of me died, which sounds so dramatic. But I remember at 15 thinking, like, there's part of me that doesn't exist anymore. That, like, innocent part that trusted them no matter what was gone.
So then did you just were on your best behavior?
Pretty much.
After that?
Pretty much. I mean, I would still, like, go to parties and stuff, but I would, like, very infrequently, and it would have to be really... it would have to feel much safer to lie, you know, like, it would have to feel like
you could.
I'm not going to end up in rehab. Like, you know, I might get grounded, but at least I won't be in rehab.
Wow. So then how do you feel like your childhood experiences unfolded as you entered adulthood?
I feel like my job became how to... Now looking, a lot of this is looking back. At the time, I think I was just trying to survive, but, like, I became the ultimate people pleaser. Like, what do I need to give them? What do I need to say to them? What do they need? And I remember writing a letter to them when I was in college and my mom kept it. I wrote a letter about what amazing parents they were. I don't know what the motivation was. Like,
you need to find that shit. I want to read that.
My mom still has it.
Of course she does.
Oh my God. And then even, like, I was still a little bit rebellious. Like, I couldn't help but just be like, to put some things in their face, right? Mm-hmm. Like I would bring a guy home from college that was just a friend. And then like we would pull out a pack of cigarettes and start smoking in front of my mom. I'm like, well, you smoke. What are you going to say? You going to send me to rehab for smoking? Like, you know, subconsciously, mm-hmm. fuck you. So there were little fuck yous here and there. But for the most part, it was like, what do I have to do? And even as an adult, as soon as I got engaged, oh, was I the golden child, man. Like, oh, all their dreams were coming true. And then when I had kids, oh, man, if they could have served me the world on a silver platter, they would have. Because I was doing all the things that I was supposed to do. And I did it. I did it well. You know, I prioritized traveling to see them. I prioritized having them stay here. I prioritized them having relationships with my husband and my children, so much so that I could not see how toxic it was every time all of us were together. And I assumed it was my husband because it couldn't be my parents. Couldn't be. Because then I'd have to look at like what the real was. And I was so far into the people pleasing and surviving that like I would tell little stories about things that happened in my childhood and laugh like it was funny. And it wasn't until I had a really good friend who is still like one of my best friends who would say, wow, that sounds like trauma. Like, I know you're laughing, but I mean, like, have we thought about how that might be traumatic?
And I'd be like, an example of a story.
Oh, yeah. So I think I shared this one in the group once. No, I don't. Maybe I didn't. So my college graduation, I went to San Francisco State. And believe it or not, it was hot my graduation day. And so my family left my graduation. Like once I got to my diploma, they just left and they went to my godmother's house in the city for the party, for the graduation party. Well, it took a long time for graduation to wrap and for me to get there. And so by the time I got there, people had already arrived and been there for a while. And my mom was already drunk. And I was hot. I was starving. I was thirsty. I had a couple friends and my boyfriend at the time that come with me. And I walked out on this little balcony and everyone's in the backyard. And I don't remember what I said. It was something about like, is it okay for me to get something to eat? Or like, I'm not really sure what I'm supposed to do because everyone's drunk. And my mom says, in front of everybody, stop being such a bitch. Mm. And I remember just kind of feeling like, how am I supposed to act now? Like, am I supposed to laugh? And so I think I laughed and I might have said, ha ha, you're the bitch, ha ha ha, you know, and went inside. But I was horrified. And I remember telling that story and that friend was like, that's not normal. That was, say that again. She was like, that's what she does. She's like, say that again. Your mom called you a bitch when you showed up at your own graduation party and she was drunk at your own graduation party. And I was like, yeah, that's funny. Not funny. When, you know, my husband knew, he caught on really quickly that my parents expect a certain thing and they expect certain things from people and you need to meet those expectations or you're on their shit list. And so when he wanted to propose, he was like, I think I should ask her dad. Like, I think they're probably old fashioned like that. So he traveled out to California where my parents were living at the time and kind of made a joke about like, he got my dad a bottle of wine or something my dad really liked and put it on the table and he said, I've got something to ask you. And if you say yes, I'm going to give this to you. If you say no, I might need it. Ha ha ha. So it was already sort of like, ha ha ha. Like he was trying to make it light. And then when he said, I want to marry your daughter, my mom said, are you sure? And so we always told that story like it was funny. And not until I started to see the Matrix and go to therapy and do a, you know, work on healing this complex trauma that I, hey, Kelly, remember that story? It's not funny, is it? And he's like, oh, it was kind of funny. And I'm like, would you say that to someone who wanted to marry one of your kids? Would you say that about your kid? And he's like, oh no, I would never say that. Yeah, it's not funny. It's mean.
Let me ask you this. How do you feel like your complex PTSD was manifesting the most?
Probably in my need to control things and control people and control other people's actions, control situations. And like some of that is don't know, I spent a lot of energy, maybe too much energy, on figuring out what is my complex PTSD and what is my neurodivergence, right? Mm. So ADHD, autism, whatever, it's like there's a need to kind of know what to expect and have some routine and order. But that's not what I mean. I mean, like, a desperate need to control a situation and to know what's happening in order to feel safe. And it was almost like when I started to heal that, it almost got worse at first. I don't know. It was like some part of me was rebelling against giving up the control. There were some things going wrong with my car. And so we are talking about, like, depending on how much the repairs are, maybe we just sell it, you know? I had a full-on meltdown about this car. I needed to know down to the penny what the repairs are going to be, and then down to the penny what we were going to sell it for and what was going to happen. And what, I mean, I was freaking out. And my husband's like, we are just having a conversation. And I was so freaked out to the point where I'm like, I can't even talk about this car. We just have to fix it. I can't talk about it. When my kids were little, I would obsess over things that in my mind, if I obsessed enough, they'd be safe. Mm-hmm. You know, if I obsessed over how the car seats were installed in the car and checked them all the time, it was like almost like OCD, but not quite. But I really feel like I thought if I worried enough that I could control it, which is such sick thinking. And I would wonder why other people weren't worrying more. Like, don't you know if you worry?
It works. It works if you work it.
Right. Just keep worrying. Yeah. So, well, that's the biggest thing. And that's the, I think, the biggest regret I have is that we've been married for 20 years, 21 years. And I tried to control things for 21 years. And now I look at, from my husband's perspective, like, that's,
how did you deal with this shit?
That's so shitty. Like, what?
No, he was a willing participant. He wasn't being held hostage.
Right. And we've had conversations since then. And, you know, the more I learn, and it's like I was codependent on my parents. And then that moved to my college roommate. And then that moved to him. And then that moved to the kids. And then now I'm like trying to not be codependent on anybody. And it's hard. It's hard. We went out the other night and I was so tired. I couldn't keep myself in check. And we were sharing a plate of nachos. And I was worried that he was going to eat more than his half. Who cares?
So good. How did your autism diagnosis come about?
I was in therapy and learning everything I can. Like, the therapy, I think, was just sort of like I would share with this person every week all the things I had learned. Like, that they were really just a sounding board. And I was learning so much, like healing so many things so quickly. And then there would be like this residual behavior that didn't match, is the best way I can explain it. Like, oh yeah, this is a behavior that's due to my complex PTSD, that's due to my being an adult child. I can do these things instead. Doesn't that feel so much better and work better? Mm. But then there'd be this thing that I couldn't change. It's hard to explain. And so I probably, like so many people in the last 3 years, was on TikTok and like learning about complex PTSD and learning about all these things. And then like all of a sudden, all these autism and ADHD things would start to like pull. And I'm like, oh, how is TikTok reading my mind? So I did a ton of research. And I think the key thing is when I was not self-diagnosing, but pretty much, I think most people who are late diagnosed as adults end up self-diagnosing, and then maybe they get a professional diagnosis. But by the time you've done all that research, it's pretty clear. Like, when you have spreadsheets based on your own behavior, you're probably autistic.
Like, probably.
I don't think other people do that.
Yeah.
And so, and that helped too. It's sometimes confusing. Oh, and then so once I kind of realized I had self-diagnosed myself as autistic, I also realized because of my trauma, I would gaslight the shit out of myself mm-hmm. if I didn't have a professional diagnosis. Mm-hmm. And so I had a professional evaluation. And then he was like, I think you also have ADHD, which complicates things. So it's helped in a way. It's helped and complicated things because the behaviors as an adult are very similar to complex PTSD or just being an adult child. It's like I grew, even if my mom hadn't been an alcoholic and I didn't have all that stuff, I would probably still have complex PTSD because I was an undiagnosed autistic child.
Think about that.
Yeah, it's complicated. It's weird to go, like, it's been almost exactly 2 years since we came home from that Tahiti trip. And so much has changed in 2 years. I feel like a completely different person, and I know I'm not done. So that's weird.
What have conversation like with your parents look like? Or just talk, because God, I feel like you have a lot of stories, but
yeah, sorry.
I'm just thinking about what you've shared in groups and stuff. I just feel like so much has happened.
I don't share much with my parents.
Yeah. Well, I guess you share a lot about like your interactions with them, but so what do they know?
When I had that like aha moment / mental breakdown in Tahiti, and I sat my mom and my husband down and I walked them through like what had happened and what I had realized. And I said, he's triangulating me and Kelly. And I said to my mom, and I think he triangulates us. Like, I don't think that's healthy. You know, I'm just like saying these things that if I said to a friend, they'd be like, no, you're right. That's healthy. And her reaction was like stoic. Like just, it was almost like she wasn't there. And I went to my dad and said the same thing. Like, I see that this thing has happened. I realize you have always done this. It stops right now. I will not tolerate it anymore. If you have something to say to my husband, you need to say it to him, not to me. And probably within 15 minutes, he said, hey, can you tell your husband blah, blah, blah? And I was like, oh, they can't even hear it. They can't hear it. It's not going to register. And so I knew immediately there was no, when people talk about, oh, I've talked to my mom about, you know, what I'm processing and what I've learned and how my childhood affected me. I know I can't have those conversations. It won't help anybody. And I had to take a lot of space from my mom for almost a year. And even when there were things I had already committed to, it was hard to be around her. And she would say things. She wouldn't ask me if I was okay or is anything going on. She would say, are you mad at me? Did I do something make you mad? Yeah, you raised me.
Exactly.
Yes, I am mad at you. And now it's a little bit better because I've progressed far enough that I can empathize with them doing the best they knew how to do with what they had. Mm-hmm. I don't know if they had the tools I have, if they would have done it differently. I don't know if they would have been able to. She still did amazing considering her upbringing. And I don't take it personally anymore. It's ridiculous, really. They're so immature as humans that it's just silly. And what's the point? They're 81 and 78.
Yeah, I don't think much change is going to happen.
No, I think it's just going to get worse. And she's had a stroke and she's...
Is she still drinking?
Yeah, not heavily. I can see what she has on her chart from her doctor, and I know what she tells me, and I know that whatever she tells me is like not, you know, there's a lot more. Yeah. You know, if she says she's having a glass of wine a week, it's probably four. Mm-hmm. But I've been there when, like in her house, when the doctor says, don't drink, and then she in her brain changes that entire conversation. And suddenly the doctor said, wine is fine, just not vodka. What doctor would say that? Yeah. So I don't ever plan to talk to them. And they don't know what a podcast is. So they probably won't hear this. And if they did, it's the truth. If you stumble across this, sorry.
What about talking about this stuff with your kids?
Well, I guess I forgot to share this. When we got back from Tahiti, I still wasn't sure what was happening. Like, I knew shit was bad, but I didn't really, it hadn't gelled yet. I think I was still in denial. I was like, yeah, but so my daughter and I went down there to visit. I forget what. I think my daughter and I went down there to visit because my dad needed some help in person with some things, like some financial papers and stuff. And my mom was treating my daughter the way she treated me when I was that age. And it was giving me nightmares. It was like my subconscious was screaming at me while we were there. Like I was having nightmares and I had this like instinct that I just wanted to get my daughter out of the house. But she was reacting in a way that she just wanted to stay in her room the whole time. And then my parents were like, why won't she come out and socialize? And there was a moment where my mom was nagging her about leaving a paper towel on the table and following her around the house, going, you shouldn't leave things out. Then other people have to pick up after you. And I like yelled at her and was like, stop it. Stop it right now. And then we almost flew home early. And so my daughter was very much like, I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry that she's treating you this way. I didn't know this was going to happen. Like we were just together on vacation and they're usually fine with my kids. And that really blew everything wide open for me. That's when it was like, I got to heal this shit. I have to heal it. I got to figure this out now, that now I can't be in denial. Now it's literally in my face. So she and I talk about it a lot. And she's to the point now, you know, 2 years later, she's like, I really love them. And I know they mean well. And I feel like they're not going to be around much longer. So I want to make sure I'm, you know, reaching out, texting them. We went to visit at Christmas time and my kids are learning how to set boundaries, which is amazing to me. You know, if my parents said or did something that made them uncomfortable, my parents are always commenting about other people on TV or in the world. And they'll just say like, I don't think that's funny and leave the room, or I don't want to watch this and leave the room. And then my dad would say, what'd I do? What'd I say? I'm like, well, you should ask them. I don't know. So, and my son has a really good relationship with them and I share stuff with him. But I don't want to taint that relationship. Like I said, my relationship with my grandparents was really special, even though they were probably shitty parents. And I don't want to. It's my job to like heal my own shit and teach my kids how to be good humans. They just want to hang out with their grandparents and go get frozen yogurt. But they know the truth. They know my parents did a shitty job. And I've said to my son, I don't want to just do better than they did. Like, you know, and so I want you to tell me if you don't like something that I'm doing, or if, you know, you feel like your boundaries have been crossed. And my son will. He had surgery a week ago and he did not like being babied, but he kind of needed to be because it was on narcotics. But he's able to say, like, you doing this or following me into my room is crossing a boundary for me. My room is my private area. That's where I feel like that's my privacy needs to be respected. And you cross that boundary. This is the best part. And if you cross it again, you know what? He like set a consequence and was like, damn. And my husband's just like, that would not go down in my household when I was growing up. I'm like, no shit. That's amazing.
Wow. Well, pat yourself on the back there, mama.
Some of it I think he's done himself too. I really do. Like he's in a lot of team sports and I think the coaches that he's had, they really do focus on like how to communicate with your teammates and, you know.
Yeah, sports are great for kids. What does he play?
He played football and he did wrestling and he played soccer when he was younger.
He didn't get the cauliflower ear, did he?
No, though he would. He's had like every other injury, so...
Well, this has been lovely. So what are three things that you like about yourself?
I'm honest. I'm loyal. And I'm no longer afraid of apologizing when I've made a mistake.
That's huge. Yeah. Hope or dream for the future?
Ooh, I just want to keep going on this journey. And it sounds cheesy when I say that, but like sometimes I don't want to do it. You know, sometimes I'm like, you know what? Being toxic is easier.
Absolutely. Or fun sometimes.
Right.
Too,
it's like, right? No, I can totally overshop and overeat. And that's fun. It's fun. There's no repercussions for it. I just want to keep going. I just want to keep going. And I think being in the community and hearing other people's like highs and lows and good days and bad days and wins and when they're like life sucks and then later on it doesn't suck again is such a good reminder for me all the time. Even when things are great, it's a good reminder to like appreciate how, like, where I am right now when it feels really good, because later it's going to get hard again. It's a roller coaster.
Well, I love watching you grow. It's like, I feel like every week you have something significant or you have an insight. You're constantly realizing things about yourself. It's really cool to watch.
Thank you. I love sharing. It's really, really helpful, but I forget who said it in the group, but like I do, sometimes I say things like a blah, 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 and then I completely dissociate. I have no idea what I just said.
Well, it's always good. It's always good. Might not be honest. Okay. Bullshit.
I think it'd be really hard to be dishonest. I don't know. I feel like it'd be really hard to be dishonest in there.
I don't know. I want to have like one person that's just like a total fraud. Like they're just like, you know, not completely.
You should get like a mole, like just like a plant, plant a liar in there. See if anybody I bet you people would pick up on it immediately. Let it all go.